Final hour, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Michelle Knezvik, Nick Fraser here with you on this Wednesday morning. Joe Rex Road is out again today. We are talking Titans, and to help us do that, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in Paul Kuharski from PaulKuharski.com. PK, good morning. How are you doing?
Morning, PK.
I'm well, guys. How you doing?
We're great. Thanks for taking time to be with us. PK, Mike Herndon of your site at PaulKuharski.com had a really interesting thread on Twitter yesterday just about the offensive line, and are we maybe being a little bit too presumptuous that the offensive line is going to be improved or significantly improved next season? We know that they've made a lot of moves on the offensive line, but I guess the quality of those moves, how concerned do you think that maybe Titans fans should be that maybe we're jumping the gun a little bit on how good that offensive line can be?
And he will expand on that thinking in a column that I will post as soon as we say goodbye.
Awesome.
I mean, I think he raises a good point. You know, the thinking is they needed new people, and I think because they got four new people, everybody expects that they'll be better, and certainly those new people can't be as bad as Dennis Daly, so there's a sense of relief there, and it's a big contrast to what they have not done at wide receiver, where they have not brought in new people. So we're built to feel better about that. But Dillard, you know, there's a downside to each one of those guys, as he points out. Dillard, Skoronski he likes, and understandably so, and he may be the best guy on the line. But Dillard didn't play in Philadelphia very much in 4 years as a number one pick. Brunskill, got beat out last year and wasn't playing in San Francisco. So you have some concern there. Duncan, the new pick, is a raw guy who, is a later round draft pick who, is a depth guy, and, he's no guarantee, but he's not in line to start on this line anyway. So new bodies for sure. And then you've got a new coach, Jason Hotaling, who was an assistant coach to a coach that everybody hated, and is not new blood from the outside or anything like that. So, I mean, there is a recipe there where it's not a guaranteed better thing. So I do think, it's a smart warning that we need to be cautious on expectations there.
PK, obviously we know with J. Rob gone and Mike Vrabel stepping into perhaps a bigger role in terms of decision-making. We know what kind of a coach he is. I think all of us agree that he's a really good coach in the NFL. But as you look at this group this year and where they're at right now with their roster, how much do you think we're going to learn about Mike Vrabel and the type of coach that he is heading into this season with this roster?
Well, I think we know very much what he is defensively. I think this – a couple of the biggest things we're going to learn. One, 3 years in a row of bad injuries. I've been on his side on the injuries. If a guy goes out and tears his ACL on the Thursday or the Friday before the season opener at practice, like Harold Landry did, I think that's huge bad luck. But I think if they have a third year of bad luck, it's hard not to say that there's something to that. And I don't think it's the strength and conditioning coach or the staff necessarily. I think a lot of people are way too casual about that. Fire those guys and that'll fix everything. But I think there's some, if Vrabel doesn't find ways to improve that, and there's a 3 year run of that, that he won't have done enough to resolve it in some way, shape, or form. And then offensively, Arthur Smith was a home run for him. LaFleur wasn't great, but that was the first year, and Downing was bad. So he needs very badly for Tim Kelly and Charles London to be excellent. And, it's exciting to hear Ryan Tannehill talk about just how different this offense is going to be. I have doubts about the personnel who are going to execute that offense, but can Mike Vrabel install people on the offensive side and guide them to do something that's bigger and better?
Paul Kaharsky from Paul Kaharsky joins us now. Paul, looking at Christian Fulton, and he's in a contract year. We know the comments that Mike Vrabel made about the repeat offender last year with him and David Long Jr. with those hamstring injuries. How important do you think this season is for Christian Fulton?
Oh, I think it's massive. I mean, I would put the odds on Christian Fulton getting a deal next year at under 50%. At this stage, and not just because of the things you mentioned, Michelle, but because the Titans don't re-sign a great deal of guys. But, you know, I think he needs to have a big year and a healthy year to put himself in any kind of position where they would, you know, break from their tradition of not re-signing guys to bring him back as an anchor corner for that group. It'd be nice for them to carry some continuity. He's a pretty good player, and it would be nice for them to have some carryover at that spot. But the fact of the matter is he's in one of those positions. Like, for him to be affordable for them, and they have a lot of money next year, but for him to be affordable in what they think he's worth, next year, he probably have to not be great this year. If he's great this year, the market will probably price him out of what they think he's worth.
I know we talk a lot about the concerns with the offense, and the hope is that the defense will be great like they were at the beginning of last season. But I look at this defense, Paul, and I think, okay, you hope Imani Hooker's healthy. You hope Christian Fulton's healthy. Elijah Molden played two games last year. Harold Landry's coming off that ACL injury. Jeffrey Simmons was hurt last year. You know, and the list goes on and on and on. When you take a look at this defense, what do you think just heading into this season as kind of an overview of it?
I think you got to get what they had really 2 years ago, where you can get to the quarterback rushing four, and then that takes care of everything. So I think the defense, to a large degree, is going to be keyed, no offense to Arden Key, but by what Harold Landry can do a year removed from an ACL. And it's a better scenario. It's a better ACL scenario because he's a full year removed. On opening day, he'll be a full year removed. But still, you want to be 2 years removed, ideally. But if they can line up with Landry and Key at the outside linebacker positions, with Simmons and Autry healthy in the middle, and those guys can get to the quarterback and put steady pressure on the quarterback and speed up the clock on the quarterback for the secondary like they were doing a lot 2 years ago on a regular basis when they stayed pretty healthy. I think the defense will be in good shape. I think if those guys are dinged up or not getting there on a regular basis, then some issues start to creep in. And then you have some questions about Monty Rice and Azeez Al-Shaair. Neither have started, full time really. And you have to see what they look like.
PK, you know, obviously Kyle Phillips barely played last year. We saw in the preseason, you know, he was cooking some guys and looked pretty good out there, was effective in the Giants game, and then he's hurt and basically a non-factor after that. You know, he's going to have to be good for the Titans this year. So what do you make of, I guess, the trust level that they're going to have to put in Kyle Phillips this year? And along with that, would you consider putting him back there returning punts to start this season as they tried to do last year?
I think he's got to be in the line of guys catching punts at the beginning of training camp, and you've got to try to rebuild his confidence and get him in the loop. I mean, they drafted him in part for that. It fell apart for him last year, obviously, but I don't think you can shelf him yet. And I think, he was fantastic in training camp last year. I'm not going to get excited about any receiver in training camp this year. I'm thinking about a daily disclaimer. Like, look, the highlights of the day were receiver so-and-so, but let's remember Marcus Johnson. Let's remember, you know, I'll have a list ready.
Racy McMath, yeah.
Yeah. And Racy McMath was like 3 days, you know. Everybody let themselves get excited over 3 good days. You know, Racy McMath is a zero. I'm sorry. But Kyle Phillips has short area quickness, period. And he's a unique guy in their bad stable of receivers. And the thing is, you know, you worry about the injuries. But it was a one time through that he suffered 2 injuries, 1 season worth of 2 injuries. So to a degree, you have to feel like he's gravy. But to another degree, they're definitely counting on him. And he's a guy people are going to love if he can play his game. And he's not strictly going to be a slot guy. I think I read the other day, I think 21% of his snaps, which were limited, obviously, came on the outside. So, you know, that number 2 receiver spot, which right now looks like a black hole, he could factor in a little bit there.
PK, last thing for you here. You know, obviously Jacksonville is going to be the divisional favorite heading into the year. How much better do you think they are with Trevor Lawrence with another year, Calvin Ridley coming in? What do you make of just how good Jacksonville could be heading into this year?
You know, they've got 2 stud outside linebacker rushers also, if you like Trevon Walker. Yep. You know, I think they should be pretty good. First place schedule hurts them. You know, they get Buffalo, they get Kansas City, they get San Francisco. Those are 3 awfully tough games, the kind of games that Jags haven't had in a while. But, you know, they also should beat up on the AFC South if they are what they think they are. I mean, I think the number one reason that I and that a lot of us would say the Jags aren't going to be as good as people think, and I think that bar is, you know, AFC South champions, not – you know, not first or second seed in the AFC by any means, is that they're the Jaguars. And Jaguars traditionally fall on their faces even with expectations. So I think they should be pretty good. I think, you know, I wrote about expectations and all 4 of the, you know, books that are on the apps have them winning the division at pretty unfavorable money. And I think there's good cause for that. It starts with the quarterback. I mean, they've got the superior quarterback in the division.
Yep, no question about that. PK, appreciate you as always. Thanks for taking time to be with us this morning, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, PK.
Good to be with you guys.
That's like Paul Kuharsky from PaulKuharsky.com, our guest on Robbie and Rex Road. Looking forward to that piece from Mike Herndon coming out later this morning on PaulKuharsky.com. We'll take your thoughts. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. 615-737-1025. A whole lot to react to, both from PK and from Barry Trotz. We will do that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063, The Game. Barry Trotz with us here on Robbie and Rex Road. So, Barry, you talked about, you know, the status of John Hines at the end of the season press conference, and now he's under contract, but some evaluation still needs to take place. Where are you at in terms of the evaluation of John Hines, and is there any news on what his status looks like for next year?
No, I said at the press conference, I'm going to evaluate. I think John did a terrific job, as I said. When I came on, we sort of moved 4 players at the trade deadline. He lost 8 players to injury, and he continued to, you know, forge on with the group. And what I like about what John did is he just coached the group that he had. And I know John and his staff are good coaches. I sat in their meetings. I listened to them. I understand what they're doing. So with John, I just said, you know, from my perspective, everybody is going to be evaluated, and And also, I'm going to evaluate other organizations, too. So if I can improve in any aspect of our organization, be it coaching or development, I'm going to try to do that. But I can tell you the staff is a really good staff. They know what they're doing, and I have a lot of questions.
That was Barry Trotz earlier on the show discussing the status of John Hines. So still evaluating, and did say at the end of that clip there, if he feels like he can improve at coach or really anywhere with the organization, that he will do that. So you know, I asked the question thinking that maybe there was a chance that he says, yeah, John Hines is under contract and he'll be back next year.
Break the news on our show.
As head coach. But Barry Trotz still saying that he is under evaluation. And that process is ongoing right now, which, you know, I will say it is interesting to me. I mean, it's May the 10th. I mean, the season for the Predators has been over for basically a month at this point. So not that there's like a hard and fast deadline of when you make these decisions as a general manager. I mean, John Hines is under contract. He does have 1 year remaining on his deal. So there's no rush if you're Barry Trotz to make a decision like this. But it is interesting. We talked about him being at the end-of-season press conference and John Hines being up there on the stage with Poyle and Trotz, and how that, you know, just reading between the lines, does that mean that he's back next season as head coach? And Trotz said at that time that he was being evaluated, and apparently the head coaching position still being evaluated by Barry Trotz as they move into the offseason. It is May the 10th. It's interesting that that's still ongoing at that point.
Yeah, it's still a not definitive, he will be our coach this upcoming season,
right,
or the answer, which we hear a lot from general managers and, you know, decision makers, is, well, he's under contract.
Right.
You know, that's usually the go-to. That's been Mike Vrabel's go-to with Ryan Tannehill, Rand Carthon's go-to. Well, Ryan's under contract with us. You know, John is under contract with the Nashville Predators. But to your point, I almost called you Junie. To your point, Robbie.
I've been called worse.
As I'm looking at them through the glass here, to your point, I mean, it seems as if, you know, there is still an evaluation process of, you know, maybe seeing what happens in the NHL playoffs. And, you know, I understand a coach who does well in the playoffs probably isn't going to get fired. But you never know in the NHL, and weighing all those options, or if it's an assistant somewhere, or he has somebody particularly on his mind. Like, if he has his guy, is something we talk about a lot when general managers come in.
Yep.
So the door has definitely been left open, cracked. But there is still time. I mean, I could even see a scenario where they start off the season, if things don't go well, then a change is made. But
yeah, I mean, things change a lot in the NHL at head coach. I mean, a lot. I mean, look, Gerard Gallant was the coach of the Rangers. He took them to the Eastern Conference Final in his first year, and they have a really good regular season this year. They load up their roster, and they get put out in the first round, and he's fired.
And he's fired.
Like, things – people get fired a lot in the NHL at the head coaching spot. And a lot of times those same coaches will end up getting hired somewhere else. So, I don't know. Look, John Hines is still under contract. There's a very good chance, I think, still that he's back as head coach next year.
Mm-hmm,
but too. The fact that Trotz has left it open this long is interesting to me, and it makes you wonder, like, is there somebody specifically out there that he's got his eye on? We've talked about Spencer Carberry, who's an assistant coach in Toronto, who, you know, if they get put out tonight, is there a frenzy for teams that still have job openings for him to be a head coach? You know, Gallant gets fired. Will he get rehired somewhere else? Peter Laviolette's out there.
Oh,
coming back here. But will he get hired somewhere else to be the head coach? And then, as Sean on the text line says, Carl Taylor is still playing in the AHL playoffs, and you can't disrupt that. I mean, you know, I don't know whether or not Barry Trotz has serious interest in Carl Taylor being a head coach and or a candidate for the Predators' job here. But I say all that to say it's very interesting to me that we're still, you know, several weeks now removed from the end of season press conferences where the evaluation was taking place, and Barry Trotz is still in the evaluation process. Again, that doesn't mean that John Hines isn't coming back as head coach, but I find it interesting that they're still kind of going through that process at this point.
I agree. And add on top of that the fact that they had the end of season press conference and all three of them were sitting next to each other.
Yeah.
Right? That and the Predators organization, I understand there's going to be a change of general manager, but right now, David Poyle still is the general manager of this team, and the official transition won't be until after the draft. And what is one thing that has been unique about the Predators organization amongst the entire NHL is that they haven't had a lot of coaching turnover. It's been an organization where David Poyle believes in consistency, believes in coaching consistency. And Barry Trotz, I mean, he's the first one to know that, right? When he started here as the head coach, you know, people were very skeptical of him. You know, what has he proven? And had a very, very long career here and then in the NHL as a whole. But this has been an organization where they haven't been quick to pull the trigger on a coach when things aren't working out. But then again, they are changing leadership in Barry Trotz when David Poyle hands over the reins. So a part of me thinks, you know, could that be the hesitation, right? Like, he's not officially the general manager yet, Robbie?
I don't know.
I mean, I don't know if that plays a role into it.
I don't know. It's interesting. Like, I kind of feel like if they wanted to move on, then you just do it, regardless of whether or not Barry Trotz is officially the GM yet or not. Like, Barry Trotz is calling the shot on this. Like, David Poyle is not calling the shot on what John Hines' future looks like next year. But it is, like, it's just really interesting to me that evaluation process is still going on. Again, that doesn't necessarily mean that John Hines isn't coming back next year, but I just found that answer from Trotz there to be interesting, particularly, like, the last part of it of, if I feel like I can upgrade the team, whether it's at coach or somewhere else, I will do that. And that's, I just thought that part of Trotz's answer was pretty interesting. We'll continue the conversation on the Preds and some hockey. Luke Evangelista, Preds forward and star Preds prospect, will join us coming up next. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie and Rex Road, presented by TJ Anderson Homes of Benchmark Realty, helping home buyers and sellers in Middle Tennessee for 20 years. We are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by Superbook. We are live from our 102.5 The Game studio, brought to you by Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical. We are scheduled to be joined by Predators prospect Luke Evangelista coming up here in the next few minutes. So looking forward that conversation with him. Taking your thoughts right now on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. 615-737-1025 is our phone number, 615-737-1025. Ben on the text line talking about John Hines and what Barry Trotz had to say on our show a few minutes ago. Said, we know that Hines isn't a special coach. It's a good enough reason to keep looking, at least. This from Ben on the text line. And that's an interesting point. I just, like, to me, if Barry Trotz is holding on this long, and let's say he's not actually made the decision yet on whether or not to bring Hines back. Mm-hmm. It just makes you wonder if there's a person or two specifically that he has in mind. And when it's gone this long, you start to think about maybe a person or two specifically that's still playing in the playoffs at this point.
In
or coaching,
the,
I guess,
in
is the
NHL
right word.
In the NHL playoffs or the AHL postseason play right now? No, I completely agree. And I think that has been the conversation that we've been having. Season's still going on.
Season is still going on, and the season is still going on as well for the Milwaukee Admirals. They've taken on the Texas Stars coming up. Game one on Friday night in the Central Division Final with the Milwaukee Admirals and the Texas Stars. They just came off a great series, very entertaining series against Manitoba, a dramatic win. Spencer Stastny scoring the game winner the other night, and the Admirals moving on to the Central Division Final against the Texas Stars. And to help us talk about that and more, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in Predators forward / Admirals forward, Luke Evangelista. Luke, good morning. How are we doing?
Good. How are you doing?
We're awesome. Good. Appreciate you taking time to be with us. So, Luke, let's just start there. What was that series like from your vantage point against Manitoba? Obviously, a lot of guys that you ended the season with here in Nashville playing up there in Milwaukee in that series. What was that series like, just the ability to bounce back from a 2-1 deficit and get that one done?
Yeah, I mean, obviously it was, you know, as tight as the series is going to get here, you know. I mean, we won it in game five with about, you know, I think it was like 30 or 20 seconds left, something like that. But, I mean, credit to Manitoba. I mean, it was an awesome series. It was back and forth, really tight, good hockey and intense, you know, in the building and stuff. But, yeah, it was awesome by our group to be able to, you know, respond after being down a little bit there and find a way to win that series. So it was awesome.
Well, Luke, you've been with this group all year, be that in Milwaukee or here in Nashville with a lot of the guys as well. I guess, what have you learned about you guys as a group? A lot of you guys are considered to be maybe that next core of the Nashville Predators coming up together here. What have you learned just about the makeup of the group that you've played with this year?
Yeah, I think a lot of our success as a group just comes from the fact that we love playing with each other, and we love being in the locker room with each other. Like, we're not just good players. We're you know, players that, you know, get along really well and care about each other. And I think when you have a kind of group like that, that gels, you know, on the ice, but also off the ice, you know, you're destined for success. So I think, you know, just, you know, how much we love and care about each other has really helped us, you know, make that extra push at certain times this year. And it's kind of gotten us to where we are today.
Luke Evangelista is on with us right now. Luke, what has it been like to have kind of a core group of you young guys? You were able to, a bunch of you, make the move to the Predators towards the end of the season, have a postseason push, and now that same group of you is back in Milwaukee with a big postseason push. How much has it just helped you guys bond together and just build that chemistry, not only in the locker room, but also on the ice?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I always talk about it, you know, even when I got called up to Nashville and, you know, walking in the locker room my first day for my first practice and just seeing a bunch of faces that, you know, I had already played with and I was already really comfortable with on the ice and off the ice. It's really helpful. And then obviously, you know, when you're, you know, you know, spending a whole year, you know, whether it's in Milwaukee or Nashville with those guys and, you know, just creating memories and experiencing that kind of stuff with them, you know, obviously it's going to, you know, gel you and make you that much closer. So it's, I mean, just overall, whether I've been with this group in Milwaukee or Nashville, it's been a blast. And, you know, I've loved playing with these guys.
Has there been anybody in particular you've, you know, just became closer with this year from the transition of Milwaukee to the Preds and back to Milwaukee?
I mean, I could honestly name you like, you know, five, six guys. But I mean, I think, you know, I got to give a shout out to my boy, Kiefer Sherwood. I mean, we played on a line in Nashville and him and his girlfriend let me live with them when we were up in Nashville for a bit too. So, he's treated me really well this year and, we have a ton of fun playing together. So I'll give a shout out to Woody.
So did, Kiefer Sherwood give you a bed? Were you crashing on the couch? And how was it living with him while you were up here in Nashville?
Yeah, he gave me a bedroom. He treated me well. I had the basement to myself, so it was all good. And it was great living with them. They're I mean, first and foremost, they're awesome cooks. So if you're a good cook, you're my good book. So they were great. They treated me really well.
Luke Evangelista with us here on Robbie and Rex Road. So Luke, you know, obviously we know what UC Saros brings to the table here in Nashville and how good he is. Yaroslav Askarov down there in Milwaukee, really highly rated prospect. It's been a lot of fun to watch him play this year, both from a talent standpoint and the fact that you never really know what he's going to do out there. What's it been like playing with Askarov, and what's been your impression of him to this point?
I mean, he's fantastic as a goalie, and also, like you said, just an entertainer. I always say, you know, once he gets to the NHL and he gets some more eyes on him, I think he's gonna be going viral on social media like once a month or something like that, just for what he's doing on the ice. He's pure entertainment out here, but he's also been, you know, fantastic this year for us. I mean, keeping us in games and, you know, sometimes stealing games for us and just making some unbelievable saves. He's been a joy to watch, and he's a great guy too. He's a pleasure to play with. So yeah, it's been a great year for him.
Luke, a lot of Predators fans obviously are really excited about you specifically and the year that you had at the end of the year here in Nashville. You know, obviously I know your season is still going on and you're focused on Milwaukee right now in the playoff run, but, you know, we've talked with you about your confidence level before. How have you handled, I guess, the success that you've had this year? You've been productive at every level that you've ever played at. How have you handled, what's been different about trying to kind of handle that at both the NHL level and the AHL level this year?
Yeah, I mean, I think fortunately, you know, in the NHL and the AHL this year, I've been put in really good positions by the staff, you know, just in terms of, you know, the amount of ice time I'm getting and, you know, guys I'm playing with and, you know, power play time, all that stuff kind of factors into, you know, being productive in terms of, you know, numbers and offensively and stuff like that. But I mean, honestly, I don't let it get to my head too much. You always kind of got to perform, and especially in my role, like part of playing, you know, being that playmaker and being a top six guy is, you know, putting up some numbers and producing offensively for the team. So just part of the job, and, you know, hopefully, you know, I'm able to, you know, keep this, you know, the momentum from this year going and finish strong here and, you know, be able to make Nashville out of camp next year. So I'm just kind of riding the wave right now.
Luke Evangelista joins us right now. Luke, Carl Taylor, you know, I'm sure he was very excited when he got you guys all back from Nashville as you guys began your postseason push. What has it been like, you know, just learning underneath Carl Taylor? And why do you think that he has, you know, been able to successfully prepare you, you know, Igor Afanasyev and all the other guys who were able to make their NHL debuts this year?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's been awesome playing with under Carl this year. I think, you know, first and foremost, he wants to win here. I mean, I think that's one of his biggest messages to us, is that obviously it is, you know, a development league, but he, you know, you got to learn to win too. So I think that's been a big part of our success this year. And just the fact that, you know, I think he just genuinely really cares about all of us as players and, you know, wants to see us succeed, and he also wants to succeed. You know, he wants to get to that next level, make that next jump. So I think just, yeah, the fact that he really cares about us, and, you know, he's pulling us aside, having one-on-one conversations with us about what we need to do to, you know, make that jump and whatnot. But no, I think he's been great for all of us, all the young guys here, in terms of, you know, hopefully getting to the next level.
Is there something specifically you like or think is beneficial just based off of his coaching style? Like, is he a super serious guy out there? Do you guys goof around? Like, what is his coaching style like with you all?
No, he can be serious when he needs to, obviously, like any coach. But, mm-hmm. he loves poking fun with us, you know, whether it's at practice or, you know, video, stuff like that. He's obviously got a lighter side. So, you know, he keeps it loose when he needs to. It keeps it fun. So, it's been great playing with him.
Luke, as we talked about earlier, you've been productive at every step of your career to this point. What have you learned about what it takes to produce and score goals at the NHL level, and just the time and space that you have, and what all goes into scoring goals at the NHL level? What's kind of stood out to you about that?
I think at the NHL level, I was just trying to use my brain a little bit more. I was playing with a guy like Tommy Novak, the guy that's just an elite playmaker, great hands, great vision. If you can find those soft spots for him and get to some open areas, he's going to find you. That's just what he does. So, I think for me, you know, using my IQ and my brain to, you know, kind of feel out where the soft spots are and find some space for him, create some space for him. I think that really helped me this year, and I think honestly I was scoring more at the NHL level than I was in the AHL. So I think that was a big part of that, and I think that's kind of the key to producing for me personally. Anyways,
Luke, last thing for you here. Obviously, the series with Texas starting coming up on Friday, and you guys will start that series off at home. What's the key to advancing and moving on with Texas as things get rolling on Friday in your mind?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really good team over there as well. They're a deep lineup, and they play hard. They're a good offensive team. But I think if we can, you know, obviously we still got some video to watch on them. But if we can, manage the puck well and not fuel their transition offense, I think we'll be good. And we got plenty of skill in our room and plenty of talent to obviously make some plays out there when they're making mistakes. So I think we can just limit our mistakes and not fuel their offense, I think we'll be good.
Well, Luke, you've been really kind with your time. Really appreciate you taking time to join us this morning. Good luck coming up against Texas starting this weekend, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Luke.
Awesome. Thank you for having me, guys.
Absolutely. Luke Evangelista, our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road. We'll take your thoughts. 615-737-1025. Our phone number, 615-737-1025. The Admirals coming up against the Texas Stars this weekend in the Calder Cup playoffs. Luke Evangelista going to be a big part of that. We'll take your thoughts on that. The John Hines discussion that we've had. The Titans on the table as well. Lots of things to get to on the text line. We will do that next. And I got some tickets to give away coming up next as well. All that ahead. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Welcome back in. Final segment of the day. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Michelle Knezovic. Nick Fraser here with you on this Wednesday morning. And I got some tickets to give away. A pair of tickets to see the Nashville Sounds take on the Gwinnett Stripers coming up at First Horizon Park this Thursday, which is tomorrow. Be caller number 3-615-737-1025. 615-737-1025. Caller number 3 will win a pair of tickets to see the Sounds take on the Gwinnett Stripers at First Horizon Park tomorrow. So should be a pretty day for baseball. 615-737-1025. We had a busy show today. Had Barry Trotz on at 7:45. Paul Kuharsky joined us at 8 o'clock for his weekly visit. And thanks to Luke Evangelista for joining us in the last segment. If you missed any of it, check out the Robbie and Rex Road podcast. You can find it on Apple, on Spotify, wherever you get your podcast. And make sure you go back and listen to that. And Michelle, I know you and Junie will have Carl Taylor coming up on the show as well. Looking forward to that as well.
9:45. Excited to talk about the Admirals making a fun postseason push. And it was fun to hear from Luke Evangelista and talk about Yaroslav Askarov, who is going to have a highlight reel of all of his viral videos on at the AHL level. And I have a feeling whenever he gets to the NHL, those will transition to him. I mean, he's had the bench pressing, the goal,
the crossbar. Yeah.
He's had a couple fights. I mean, the splits. The guy's all over the place.
He skates out of the net and skates to center ice at times and plays the puck. It's very entertaining to watch him play. So, look, I'm interested to see how the Admirals do. Obviously, I know it's Milwaukee. It's down in the American League, so it's not the same as the Stanley Cup playoffs, obviously. But a lot of Predators fans very interested in the run that they're going to make. So, looking forward to whether or not they can keep that going. Texas is very good. They got a lot of really good prospects in the Dallas Stars system. So this is going to be a tough one for the Admirals, but we'll see if they can they can push through and advance that way. 615-737-1025. One thing that Paul Kuharsky brought up earlier this hour that I think is really interesting that is going to determine, I think, a lot of how this Titans defense looks. He brought up a couple of years ago where they could rush four, get after the passer, and it really kind of took care of everything else. That's going to be a really intriguing thing to see if the Titans can do this year. You bring in Arden Key, who I think is a good signing. I like his fit here with the Titans. We know about Jeffrey Simmons and what he's going to bring to the table. You know, Danico Autry has been awesome for the Titans. Now, he's another year older. Can he still keep up the pace that he's been at the last couple of years? We'll wait and see on that front. But he has been incredibly important to what the Titans do. He's 32. He'll be 33 coming up. So can he continue that pace into this year? But Harold Landry, the big one, right? I mean, the last time we saw Harold Landry, he was playing at a Pro Bowl level for the Titans. He gets the big contract, and unfortunately, he has terrible luck. He tears his ACL last year, and he misses the entire season. So the last time we saw him was 2021, where he had 12 sacks. He played well in the playoff game against Cincinnati, and he was a guy that you could rely on to get after the passer. He's, to me, for this defense to be what we think it can be, like, he's got to be that guy again. He's got to be the guy that maybe it's not necessarily 12 sacks, but it needs to be around 9 or 10 or 11, somewhere in that neighborhood where you're constantly getting pressure on the quarterback. And if they can't do that, that's going to expose weaknesses everywhere else. So the Titans defense and how good they're going to be this year, to me, begins and ends with the pass rush. And Harold Landry coming off the ACL, a big question mark on that front.
Yeah, I mean, to your point, Robbie, it helps cover up some of the issues that they have in the secondary and a not too strong secondary. I mean, last year, because of a lot of injuries with, you know, Fulton and Elijah Molden and Imani Hooker. But, you know, Harold Landry coming off one of his best seasons. We talked about when he was healthy before the ACL injury. I mean, he was a guy who could play in every single game, and his best ability was availability. I mean, he was out there every single week. His health was something.
Playing like 98% of the snaps, too. It was unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, it was incredible. So, I mean, if he heals from this ACL, you hope that he can come back and be that same type of player for you. I'm also looking, too, because they lost a David Long Jr., who was a big part of that, and a Rashad Weaver taking another big step this year. I mean, last year technically was his second year, but really his first year because of the injuries, his first year with the Tennessee Titans, but looking for him to take another big step last year. He definitely had some moments where, you know, he kind of let the quarterback get out of the pocket. I mean, I think of the Chiefs game where Patrick Mahomes runs out and you got to fix some of those mistakes. And hopefully, you know, having a guy like Harold Landry there as well will help him. Hopefully he takes another step, but to your point too, Jeffrey Simmons is still young. You hope he comes back fully healthy. But Danico Autry, another year older, and he was somebody who struggled with the knee injuries last year. So I think when you look at it from that perspective, if they can get back to their defensive mind, especially up front, being lethal up front and being able to rush the passer. I mean, they had DeMarcus Walker there last year too, who had 7 sacks. He had a pretty big season, who's now in Chicago right now. So what can that look like? What can the addition of Monty Rice, well, I mean, I know he's on the team, but what can Monty Rice look like taking on a bigger role too? Yep. Some of it is known of what the guys can do, and a lot of it is who can stay healthy and who can take a big leap from last year to this year.
Well, we talked about it earlier. Like, Mike Vrabel and PK, I think, did a really good job of explaining this. Like, defensively, I think we know what Vrabel is.
Yes.
Especially with the personnel that he's got at his disposal. You know, I feel reasonably good about the Titans' defense if they stay healthy, being potent, and being something that's a problem for other people. I mean, it got to the point, I know Saquon tore him up in the first game last year on the ground. It got to the point after that, basically, where teams just stopped trying to run against the Titans because there's no point.
Yeah.
Like, you had Jeffrey Simmons getting pushed up front. You had Autry getting pushed up front. T.R. Tartt getting pushed up front. I mean, it was difficult to run the ball against the Titans last year. So, I feel good about the toughness and all that stuff on the defensive side of the ball. Offensively is where we're going to find out a lot about this group this year. You got a new offensive coordinator with Tim Kelly coming in. Charles London is the quarterback coach coming in. And I think it's really important that those guys have some success and that they show some promise. Number one, being able to develop Will Levis, whatever that looks like this year, whether he plays, whether he doesn't play. Like, that's got to be job one for Charles London moving forward here is Will Levis and what that means. But the second part of that is Ryan Tannehill and Chig Okonkwo spoke last week, and it does sound like the offense is going to look different. Now, what does that mean? How different does the offense look? And do they have the personnel to actually execute the different concepts that they want to have in their offense? All that remains to be seen. But it's a really big year from my standpoint on Vrabel's front for that. Like, he needs the offense to show some promise this year and just to be, exciting is not the right term, because if you're winning games, being exciting doesn't really matter. But being more productive and more consistent offensively, it's got to happen for the Titans this year. And the personnel makes you wonder if it's going to. I think that we're gonna find out a lot about the coaching staff the Titans have offensively with Kelly and London and Vrabel kind of leading the charge there.
Well, and not only productive, but not as predictable.
Yep.
And I think that was one of the major flaws of, the way that Todd Downing ran this offense, especially having Derrick Henry. I mean, you could almost guarantee the plays that Derrick Henry, it was going to be handed off to Derrick Henry. I mean, I remember some of us sitting in the press box. It's like, okay, Derrick Henry run here. Why is he off the field now? And certain things like that. So I think it was pretty telling to hear Ryan Tannehill and Chig Okonkwo just speak on how they feel like the offense is already so different. And Ryan Tannehill is here. He is here early, making sure to build that chemistry with Tim Kelly. And I think coaching is going to be a huge, huge factor this year. I mean, it always is, but even more so this year because of the personnel they have on the offensive side of the ball.
Yeah, I think it's a great point. And I think it's one of those things, too, where, Tim Kelly coming in, putting this offense in the best position to succeed. What does that look like? Does that mean that they're going to run a lot of two tight end sets, and you're going to see some Wiley out there with Okonkwo a lot? Or do you get to a point with this receiving room where you look in and you say, you know what, we feel good about going three wide out there. We feel good about Treylon Burks and Kyle Phillips and NWI or whoever that is. Like, obviously, you're going to have to mix it up, but there's going to be a bread and butter that Tim Kelly and the Titans want to stick with. And whatever ends up being the most productive is interesting. And one of the other points we brought up today is the offensive line. Mike Herndon at PaulKarski.com put together kind of a really interesting thread about, are we really sure that the offensive line is going to be significantly better than it was a year ago? You've got a rookie coming in that you just drafted in Skoronski, a second-year player in Petit Frere at right tackle that needs to take a big step, Aaron Brewer at center, which didn't go overly well at guard last year, and then two guys in Brunskill and Dillard that didn't start and didn't play a whole lot for their team. So how sure are we really that the Titans' offensive line is going to be dramatically improved? That part of it's going to be really interesting to see, but that makes this group pretty interesting heading into camp.
I agree. There's a lot of question marks, and I think you can paint the picture on both sides. You can paint it to look really positive if X, Y, and Z all work out. Treylon Burks takes a step, Treylon Burks takes a step, Kyle Phillips takes a step. and the entire offensive line, you know, works and meshes together, and the moves that they have made have worked out. But you can also paint the picture on the opposite side of things. You know, Aaron Brewer doesn't pan out. Peter Skoronski has a tough rookie year. Nicholas Petit-Frere doesn't take another step. So it's going to be interesting, Robbie Stanley.
It is. Michelle, another good day in the books here. You've got 2 more hours of radio coming up next with Michelle and Junie. That does it for us today on Robbie and Rexroth. We'll be back 6 a.m. tomorrow. You're listening to 102.5, 106.3, The Game.